Mark Ancos America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We are having a couple of guests this morning. Feedback. Our guests will include Thomas Ginn, who is a Southern conservative culture traditionalist. He'll be on a little bit after the first commercial break this morning up through 9 a.m. And then we're going to have Bill Bloom on from 9 to 9:30 this morning. Who has something called the Anti-Empire Report. I receive this on a regular basis from Bill. He's based in the Washington, D.C. area. And it's a good compendium of articles that deal with the whole issue of empire, the so-called American empire, and all of the reasons why you and I need to be aware of what the American empire is up to. Speaking of things that the empire is up to, there are a series of things today that are worth taking a look at in the news media. The Jewish Week, which serves the Jewish community of Greater New York, takes note of the fact that hardline pastor John Hagee gets prime AIPAC spot. Reverend John Hagee's appearance is drawing criticism on the eve of the policy conference. This comes to us from James Besser, the Washington correspondent of the Jewish Week. Mr. Besser notes that growing ties between pro-Israel forces and a controversial hardline Christian Zionist movement will move into the national spotlight at the policy conference of the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, or AIPAC, the pro-Israel lobby. One keynoter at the event, which annually draws hundreds of lawmakers, administration officials, diplomats, and political hopefuls, will be Pastor John Hagee, founder of Christians United for Israel, author of several books about biblical prophecy, and an opponent of new territorial concessions to the Palestinians on biblical grounds. Reverend Hagee, who will speak at a Sunday plenary, was also a leading backer of a controversial Christian broadcast venture in Israel that critics charged sought to convert Jews. And at a time when pro-Israel forces are being accused of beating the drums for a war with Iran, Reverend Hagee seems to believe such a conflict is both inevitable and necessary. In his apocalypse-oriented book, Jerusalem Countdown, he predicted a nuclear showdown with Iran and said, quote, "The end of the world as we know it is rapidly approaching. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad. The best is yet to be," unquote, according to a Wall Street Journal report posted on the Christians United for Israel website. Last year, Reverend Hagee told the Jerusalem Post that, quote, "I would hope the United States would join Israel in a military preemptive strike to take out the nuclear capability of Iran for the salvation of Western civilization," unquote. Israeli historian Michael Oren will also speak at Sunday's plenary. Giving Reverend Hagee such prominence at the premier pro-Israel gathering of the year, he attended last year's conference, troubles some AIPAC supporters. Rabbi Barry Block of Temple Beth El in San Antonio, the home of the John Hagee Ministries and to his 18,000-member Cornerstone Church, said he hopes the minister's presence will be balanced by, quote, "Christians who support Israel, but who do not share the end-of-the-days theology and extremist anti-Palestinian positions and anti-Muslim prejudice, so often spewed by Pastor Hagee," unquote. Rabbi Block, who said he is an AIPAC supporter and participates in local activities of the lobby, added that, quote, "There are those I love and respect in my community who believe we should work with Pastor Hagee on the important concern we share, the welfare of the State of Israel. However, despite what may be good intentions, I don't think Pastor Hagee's activism is good for Israel," unquote. Rabbi Chaim Dov Beliak, co-founder of a We site that opposes Christian rights state church policies, said that Hagee's AIPAC appearance will mark a, quote, "decisive point when the costs of a relationship with Hagee couldn't be clearer. AIPAC has to know that Hagee's push for an attack on Iran is not based on a logically constructed policy, but on cherry-picked biblical verses. And it is only the first step to the end-time scenario that Hagee enthusiastically predicts will engulf Israel in a devastating war." This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio on RBN. We'll be back with Thomas Ginn. Stay tuned.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49. Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency, and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined this morning by a gentleman who has a lot to say about the American War between the states and about the about Confederate issues related to the history of the Confederacy, the way in which the culture of the Confederacy continues to impact all of us. And he also has some very interesting things to say about the things that he believes politically as a result of his understanding of Confederate culture and history that may have an awful lot more to say to us than we might initially imagine. And this gentleman's name is Thomas Ginn. He has a series of websites that we're going to point out to you throughout the show this morning from 7 to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time. And we'll just get into a conversation with Tom and see where it leads. How are you, sir? You there, Thomas? Tom, you here?
I'm here.
Yes, how are you? And I just wanted to introduce the listeners to some of your websites. If you could start out the conversation by highlighting the location of those for us.
All right. My main site is CSA News, which is the online address is csanews.net. And that dates back to the late 1980, about December 1989, when it was a printed publication, and it was one of the first that we know of, Southern publication of any kind, to advocate an independent Confederacy. But right now we're working on a project we call the Confederate Legion, which that website is ConfederateLegion.com, and it also includes within it Confederate Legion Youth Corps. Now, the idea, people immediately think we're talking about a militia or an armed force, which is not true. This is a Confederate Ceremonial Honor Guard. We propose something quite radical, and using the Confederate Legion, we propose to hold one of the largest marches probably in the history of the United States to one or more major cities. My idea is to eventually march such a legion through Richmond, Virginia, and possibly even through Washington, D.C. The idea is the return of those long gray lines that everybody talked about. You go in a parade nowadays, you don't see very little Southern, very little Confederacy. Well, I propose to change that and use this as an attention getter for political advocates, advocacy of our cause. Probably the Confederate cause, as we understand it in modern times, can best be understood by one single document if our listeners would log on board and read it and pass it around. It's called the Proclamation of Independence, written by a scholar, and it can be found on the following website, ConfederateStatesAlliance.net. And you'll see on the menu listed Proclamation of Independence. Now, what it basically, in essence, says is that freely constitutionally elected governments have not turned over their sovereignty to conquering armies. Nobody gave generals and admirals or foreign invaders the right to rescind constitutions or to disband nations. Now, whether history likes it or not, the Confederate States of America was a sovereign nation. It had a constitution which was established not unlike the U.S. Constitution. And the two nations were created under similar circumstances in this regard. The Confederacy is often condemned because we had slaves. Well, the slaves were sold to the South by the North, and the United States was established at a time when it owned slaves. The Confederacy under similar circumstances. So that ticket don't sell. And under our view, slavery is relegated to history where it properly belongs. And I've been asked more times, does that mean that the Confederacy would arise and you could have slaves? No. If you read the Confederate Constitution, you can't make a free man a slave, and therefore it's a dead issue. And you can't import slaves, so that ends the issue. The issue now is the sovereignty of a nation. And people think that, well, the Confederacy, wouldn't it be like the United States? No. There are many differences in the Confederate Constitution, which any U.S. president would love. The line item veto, for example. We have a president. We would never have a Confederate president running for re-election. He's elected for 6 years, and he can't be re-elected. Balanced budget is built within the Confederate Constitution, and there's no national federal welfare system. The states, they can do as they wish. What it amounts to, I'm saying, is the United States has drifted far, far away from the issue of domestic governance by the states. The national government was never intended to be the gathering place for all power and all authority. The domestic governance was intended to be a state issue. For example, years back we had the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. It should be no business of the U.S. government how fast people or slow they go in any individual state. You have abortion. The whole entire abortion issue would not be an issue if it was a state issue. That's a domestic issue, just like most crimes are state issues. And so this would be a state issue to decide one way or another, depending on the state's own political climate. I could go on and on, but this is what we're saying. And we believe this, that if anyone who can say the Confederate Constitution is no longer exists, that it's no longer in authority, reverse the situation and say, what would happen if the United States were conquered? Say, for example, the United States had lost the war with Japan. Japan had conquered the United States. Truman might have went on the run. We would have had a situation where the United States Congress would have been scattered under occupation. We would have not had elections. Now, let us stop and say, does that mean the United States no longer exists? Well, France was occupied by the Germans, and yet no one ever proclaimed that Japan, that it did not exist as a sovereign, separate nation. Of course it did. And you could debate this in a neutral school of law, and you'd find out that the Confederacy was no different than any other nation. It's an occupied nation. It has not been disbanded. It has not been... true, our Constitution is inactive because of the occupation, but it is not true that it's been rescinded. There was no delegation of the states meeting to amend the Confederate Constitution to disband it. There was no action at all was ever taken to do this. It was just assumed by the power of the conqueror and his sword to say that it no longer was, that it was invalid. Well, if the Confederacy had won, would they have taken the same position? That's what I'm saying. Would they have suddenly agreed that the United States no longer existed had the Confederacy? Well, of course they wouldn't. And they would be today doing exactly what I'm doing right now. They would be saying, we have a right to exist as a sovereign nation. We asked, let me say this, we are not militants. Those who think so would be looking at the wrong cause. We believe that the Confederacy should be liberated peacefully, lawfully, and that afterward the two nations should live together as brother nations. There's no other way. Cannot be any weapons, no guns, no shots fired. This has to be a political, cultural issue, strictly that and no more. And this is why the Confederate Legion has been established. We're growing throughout the states, and in due course of time, we will gain the undivided attention of the mass media, and with that, we will address the American people and with our cause. And this is what I'm saying, and I would certainly hope that everybody within the sound of my voice would contact the Confederate Legion and see what you can do to help. We want a million men plus women and youth to be on the street when the time is called. And that's what we're about. We are, I believe that this can be done. I've heard all my life, I've heard people talk about the South is going to rise again. Now's the time to put your money where your mouth is. Either we do it or we don't, and now's the time to begin to take action. The world, the United States, will not be any worse off. In fact, it'll be better. But...
We'll be back with Thomas Ginn of the Confederate Legion. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back. Stay tuned. Thank you.
Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We wish to greet our new affiliate, WMQM AM 1600 in Memphis, Tennessee. That's a 50,000-watt station that's going to be bringing Mark Dankoff's America and the Republic Broadcasting Network to a much wider audience in the American South. And we also wish to greet today our guest, Thomas Ginn. He is a Southern traditionalist, a Southern historian, and has an awful lot to say about the Confederate States of America and the way in which that continues to have an impact on American history and culture today. You can find a number of Tom's websites. You can go to csanews.net. That's csanews.net. You can find information at confederatelegion.com, confederatelegion.com. You can also find a very interesting document entitled The Proclamation of Independence, by looking at ConfederateStatesAlliance.net. That's ConfederateStatesAlliance.net. And you'll find the Proclamation of Independence that Thomas Ginn has been sharing with us this morning. Thomas, do you find that in today's political climate, and I'm making reference to the fact that I would suspect that for a lot of people, Washington, D.C. is a very unpopular place in regard to the direction that we've been going in politically and culturally for some time. I mean, here we have a move not only toward a Leviathan central government vis-a-vis the states, but, of course, since 1945, with the advent of the United Nations, we've been seeing the impact of the globalization movement on the American political structure and the American economic scene. We've seen the United States embroiled in all kinds of problems related to borrowing money from foreign banks and excruciating levels of public and private debt. We're involved in a very unpopular war abroad in Iraq that evokes images of an earlier British imperialism, many people would argue, both the 20th century and even going back prior to the 20th century, where Great Britain's foreign policy is concerned. And it evokes for many people images of George Washington's founding father's address, or farewell address, I'm sorry, where he was talking about the whole issue of avoiding foreign entanglements for reasons that perhaps seem most painfully obvious to us now. The point being that with all of this disenchantment with Washington, D.C., a sense that our central government is out of touch and out of control, that they're transferring powers to globalist institutions that are even more removed from the average American citizen than the federal government has been up to this point. And when we see all of the ramifications of that in terms of ongoing foreign wars and in public and private debt and borrowing money from foreign banks and all of the cultural declension that we have known just in my lifetime in this country, does this type of a scenario make the appeal that you're making on behalf of the repristination of the Confederacy potentially more appealing to a wider number of people?
I believe that's true. Let me explain. The
yes.
If we were successful, I am confident that this would benefit everyone, all the states, north and south, east and west, for this reason. As you know, any central government which has no restrictions, no restraints, and this one doesn't. The reason it has no restraints is because there's no immediate way for we the people to control the federal government. Here's the difference in this and the Confederate Constitution. The United States Constitution does not, it's near impossible to get a federal judge, a sitting Supreme Court justice particularly, to be removed from the bench or to be even put on trial. The difference in this and the Confederate Constitution is any three Confederate states can bring charges against a sitting federal judge. And normally the reason under the Confederate Constitution would be that they have usurped authority never granted in the Constitution. This would be the basic thing. The federal courts, the Supreme Court particularly, is basically designed to be more of a referee where two states are in conflict. It was never intended to be an all-powerful imperial entity that would decide all of the things that they do. Now, the Confederacy has remedied that problem. And also, there's no way to get the Constitution amended with the type of amendments we wish to do. Let me use an example. You spoke about foreign affairs, that the U.S. President and the Congress can hand off the sovereignty of the United States to foreign entities. And what we the people are quite restricted as to what we can do about it. But under the Confederate Constitution, again, any three states can call a closed constitutional convention which could remedy that. A closed constitutional convention simply means that only the purpose and the subject for which it was called can be addressed. Now, under the U.S. Constitution, there's only one type of convention that can be called, and that is an open convention where the entire Constitution can be thrown out. Now, this is why in the United States we've never called a constitutional convention, because the liberals are afraid the conservatives would take over, the conservatives are afraid the liberals would take over. So then you have a stalemate. Nobody will suppress or restrict the federal government. And the Confederacy has remedied that, and we've done it in a number of ways. And you would not have the problems under the Confederacy that you have with the U.S. First of all, many of the here's another situation people forget. The United States Senate is popularly elected. Now, here's the problem with that. That sounds real democratic, but the Senate was never intended to be popularly elected. The House of Representatives was to represent we the people, and the Senate was designed to represent the sovereignty of the states. People got to get that through their mind. The U.S. Constitution was amended to change it from what it was to a popular election. Now, here was the way the Confederate Constitution remains as it was, and here's how a Confederate here's how the states have a sovereign say-so were the Confederate Constitution reenacted, put back in force. It would.
Tom, hold your thought. We'll be right back. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with Thomas Ginn. You can find him at csanews.net, confederatelegion.com, and confederatestatesalliance.net. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Thomas Ginn. You can find Thomas Ginn at csanews.net, confederatelegion.com, and confederatestatesalliance.net. Thomas, take it away with where we were before the break. Go ahead, sir.
Well, what I was saying is that the Confederate Constitution was basically, they started with the U.S. Constitution, because many of these people, such as Jefferson Davis and many others, and Robert E. Lee, had relationships dating back to the Founding Fathers of the United States. They were quite familiar with what the Founding Fathers of the United States intended. So they simply, let's say, updated the Constitution as it was in the form of the Confederate Constitution. So I like to say that true constitutionalism runs from the founding of the United States through the Confederacy, not through the present-day United States. Now, here's another little answer to people who think the United States. Observe that the United States is, anybody's guess, $10 trillion or whatever in debt. That would probably never happen under the Confederacy for this reason. Federal expenditures under the Confederacy can only be spent on goods and services received, and you cannot have a contract with a Confederate government which is open-ended. Most of us are familiar that a contract to build, say, jet fighters. You build a jet fighter, and they say $1 million a jet. And then by the time it's over, it's $3 or $4 million a jet. That's just an example. I don't know what they cost, but that's an example. Well, when under the Confederacy, the requirement is that you state the price of the contract and you obey it. And this prevents runaway government, along with the idea that the president has a line item veto. So if any pork gets through the system, it's the Confederate president's fault and not the Congress, because he has the line item veto. So, and also, people can cut short any attempt to turn over sovereignty to a foreign entity by simply calling a closed convention. Now, the Confederacy, like the U.S., has the open convention system, and that normally works under most, either the states call an open convention, which you can do in the United States, or you call it through the Congress. The Confederate States of America, people have to understand, if it arose again, it is not the enemy of the United States. Okay? The only reason the Civil War was fought is because Abraham Lincoln would not take a short trip and meet Jefferson Davis halfway. If the two men had ever got together, I think Abraham Lincoln would have found Jefferson Davis quite amenable to some kind of an agreement where both nations could live together in peace. The Civil War was absolutely unnecessary. All that Abraham Lincoln had to do is recognize the right of the Southern people to do exactly what the colonies did and break the political bonds and create their own nation. Now, one should ask, how would the United States benefit what's left of it from a rise of the Confederacy? Number one, you can take Ohio, Indiana, Illinois. There would be no state which the federal government in Washington could never reign supreme over the states ever again once the Confederacy was free. Now, you'd still have the United States. The U.S. Constitution would be in effect. The difference would be that the Constitution would be in effect in the United States. It would not be overridden or ignored. And let me use an example. Ohio, as an example, or Indiana, Illinois, New York, would be able to govern over all domestic affairs within their own respective states. Now, how can I say that? Because the pressure would be upon the federal government to allow the states to govern themselves, or another state would leave the union. And so, you know, there's an old saying, and people say, well, why would you put that threat over the federal government? Because it's simple. It's simple that if the government fears the people, you have democracy. If the people fear the government, you have tyranny. And the United States, the citizens, have simply forgot that simple phrase from history, and it is true. So, therefore, a liberated and restored Confederacy would help all sides. And it doesn't mean the trucks will stop rolling. You'll have the 18-wheelers will still be rolling through all the 48 continental states and across borders. You'll still have the planes will still be flying. The only difference is you'll have a sovereign nation in the South. And there's another political, another religious issue. Both constitutions permit freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. Therefore, when the Confederacy arises, there will be freedom of religion once more, and that does not mean freedom for every religion except Christianity. Okay, it will mean freely to promulgate and proselytize for the Christian faith and to teach it publicly and privately. I think this is the only way it can work, and I believe that every citizen of every state would benefit by the rebirth of the Confederacy. I am also concerned that we talk about immigration, illegal immigration. I think the Confederacy has the answer for that too, and part of it would be there would probably be a move to change the system whereby a child born in the United States, or in this case the Confederate States, is automatically a citizen even though the parent was an illegal immigrant. Well, you need to readdress that. Now, I don't have no ready answers, but I think that we the people, should address it. It should not be addressed strictly in the halls of government and left to a federal agency that won't take action. It needs to be addressed by we the people. And if the U.S. Congress won't act, then perhaps the Confederate States Congress will. And I think that any nation has a right to secure its borders. And let me say this. I do not believe it's the right of any people of any land to mass migrate across the borders of another nation in to such a large degree that they change their culture, their history, and change their government. People have a right to establish their own government and their own society, and I believe this includes the both the United States and the Confederate States. I do not believe it's the right of Hispanic-speaking people to send tens of millions of people across the border and then proclaim that they're somehow an abused minority. I just don't think that. And let me say one last thing about the racial issue. I'm old enough to remember when the whole integration movement started and the civil rights movement started. And Martin Luther King said something concerning the day should come when people are judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. Well, then let us enact that into law. And and let the U.S. government, and in this case the Confederate government, be forbidden to enumerate the population by race. Eliminate the race issue right there. No census of the United States, and in this case the Confederate States, has but one purpose: to count how many people there are, period. They don't need to know how many toilet seats we got. They don't need to know how many of each race we got, how many of various incomes we got. All they have to know is how many people live here. And that's where you start with the race issue. And you end up with a situation that if people want equality, equality also means responsibility. And it means facing competition. If the Hispanic man, the black man, or the white man cannot compete in an open marketplace, then it's not the fault of equality. It's the fault of not being prepared to go out into the world and compete. And maybe we should think about preparing these people to compete rather than simply having quotas and affirmative action. Affirmative action is just another word for bigotry coming from the other end. If it's all right to have Negro colleges, as they call them, a Negro college fund, then why is it bigoted to have a white college fund? I don't believe in either one. I believe in a college fund, period. And you eliminate the race. I think we have to also address the ACLU issue. We have these groups, such as ACLU, they amount to civil and constitutional terrorism. You name anything that's good and wholesome, and they're against it. We have to bring this to an end. Somebody has to find a way to disband the civil rights movement, to have equal quality of races, and also to disband the civil terrorists. Nobody assigned the ACLU to be a fourth branch of government, and that's what they've become. And the media has become even worse. By and large, you have a media who I'm afraid would sell the country out simply for a story. And I think that has to come to an end. I think you need a free press, and the way you get a free press is to somehow arrange to at least minimize the monopoly of the mass media by a few corporations. Now, I don't know how many corporations there are, but there can't be more than half a dozen or so that own all the mass media. When was the last time you seen a large city newspaper that was separately owned by the people and citizens of that city? Well, they don't exist anymore. They're all owned by national corporations or international corporations. Return freedom of the press to the local and state jurisdictions where it properly belongs. Now, so one last issue I'd like to bring up, and that's this. The issue, some people ask how you would address it. Well, you simply change the licensing procedure. The states are sovereign, so who broadcasts within their own states should be licensed by each individual state and not the federal government. Now, I have no problem with a single source for assigning frequencies for the sake of convenience. But I do believe that the licensing of various businesses should be, including the media, should be returned to the local, to the states. Now, this would give the states the additional clout of saying moral issues, for example, that if one state may be more liberal-minded and may say, well, this is all right on television here, other states may say, we won't have it here. Well, this would be a state morality code, and this would be up to each individual state. Now, somebody asked me real recently, wouldn't the South go back to segregation? I don't think so, because today's black people wouldn't tolerate it. And if, for example, Mississippi wanted to, they would have to live within their own borders with the chaos they create. This would be the responsibility part, half of having this kind of freedom to govern over all domestic affairs. I believe that this is the only way. Now, I am totally confident that of another issue, involvement in foreign wars. I believe that, such as General Douglas MacArthur believed, that the aim of a war is victory. There is no There is no substitute for victory in a war. If you don't intend to win, then don't go into the war. And Vietnam was one war. It was winnable. But we refused to win it. Iraq is winnable, but we refused to win it. Now, I also believe this, that you can't, that you never send an army to do what a half a dozen men, good men can do. And Iraq could have been solved by probably one or two men, if you'd have sent the right one or two men. It's not necessary to fight every nation on earth down to the dirt in order to get the job done. And under the Confederacy, I think you'd find that the system we have of National Guard would be terminated in the Confederacy. You would have state armed forces and national armed forces. The state armed forces would be under strictly the command of the governor, and would only be federalized in case of a declared war in those terms, or the imminent threat of an attack upon the nation. Now, this is how the United States would benefit. Now, supposing President Bush or any other president, supposing he had to openly declare war in order to send troops overseas, I have a feeling he wouldn't be sending very many troops to foreign wars. When he did, he would mean business. And if he had to declare war in order to gain command of the state forces to augment his federal army, he would think twice. I think that this would allow the nation, the Confederacy, and eventually the United States, to be able to defend itself easily. But it would no longer be possible for them to be the world's policemen. Now, there's real troubles in Iraq, and there were before we got in, but it did not require a major war in order to get the job done. It could have been done covertly, and in other ways could have been resolved. I just don't believe it's necessary to shed blood on a massive scale to get an international job job done. Probably the only war in modern times that was totally justified, and that was the Second World War, and for good reasons that everybody should understand. But this is what the Confederate movement is about. It is about simply restoring domestic governance to the states. It is about returning to a limited, restricted, and restrained federal government. Yes, there's things you want the federal government to do. You don't want 50 states coining and printing money. In like manner, you don't want 50 different states to be in charge of foreign affairs. These are things for the federal government to do, and they would do so under the Confederacy. You don't want 50 individual states building a separate national armed force. A state force, yes, but also... There is many issues under the Confederacy. Someone even asked me an interesting question. How would you deal with natural emergencies such as hurricanes, tornadoes, through interstate cooperatives? People don't understand that. Those were permitted under the Confederacy. Several states would form a cooperative, and they would begin to pool their resources towards an emergency. Then you would find the people who sit on the board of the cooperative would be direct delegates from the individual states who would act directly in interest of the state. So what I'm saying is, there is no real problem that can't be resolved. You look around you. I believe that if people understand what the Confederate movement is about, I believe they would support it on a massive scale, and I'm asking them to do so. But under this circumstances, we don't go to war to get a job done that can be done politically and peacefully. That ain't going to happen in the modern Confederate movement. And I think that we don't need to add more graveyards to the north or to the south or the east or the west. We've got plenty of those already. This is a political issue, and I'm asking that it be resolved under political means, and I mean all people. If blacks want to be equal, then let us be equal. And let us not have affirmative action, and let us not have the ACLU telling us we can't pray in our schools, And I went to school, for example, with a school that was two-thirds Jewish and one-third Christian. We celebrated Easter, Hanukkah, and all the other holidays, and we all participated together voluntarily. We had no problem with that. And that could be the same thing done today. If you have holidays celebrated by one religion, another one by another, you get together and you find out how you're going to do it on a local scale, not on a federal scale. And I believe that local school boards, state education people can solve the problem. And I would, under the Confederacy, if I was alive then, I would simply add one little boost to the situation. I would make it a criminal offense for any federal official to involve himself in the educational process in any way, shape, or form, save for the purpose of national defense under the armed forces, such as West Point. Outside of that, they have no business whatsoever even discussing the educational issue. It ain't none of the, you don't need a national educational department. It ain't none of their business to start with. Return to the enumerated powers of the Constitution. And talking about constitutionalism, let us address...
We'll be back. This is Mark Dankos, America. Stay tuned.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information. Information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49. Call AFP toll-free 888-699-NEWS or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Hi, Michelle. I haven't seen you on the bus for a while. Did they change your shift?
No, Lori. I finally quit my job. I'm working at home now, and I love it. No more commuting. And I'm home when the kids get out of school.
Working at home? Doing what?
It's a long story. It all started when I discovered the website earnmoneyathome123.com.
Oh, Michelle, you didn't fall for one of those internet deals, did you?
Well, I looked into several, and this one is for real.
Are you sure?
I didn't quit my job until I was sure, and now I'm making way more money working at home.
Really?
I've joined the success team and their major advertising co-op. Our business is fully automated, which gives me more money and the time to enjoy it. I'll be earning money while we're skiing this winter.
What was that website again?
EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Here, write it down.
Good idea. EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Maybe we can go skiing this winter, too.
EarnMoneyAtHome123.com is a global opportunity.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of choice garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN Network.
And the liars, they are no
back. This is Mark Nankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest today is Thomas Ginn, who is an advocate of a return to the Confederate States of America. He's a Southern traditionalist, has an awful lot to say about the dangers of a consolidated power residing in a central government. Also has some things to say, I believe, about the dangers of globalization today as it relates to the political rights of every citizen of an entity that would not be under the control of the forces that are driving us toward a complete participation in a global new world order. Before I go any farther with that, I just wanted to mention both to our guests as well as to our listeners that there are going to be a series of commercial breaks in about the next 10 minutes of the show, and then there'll be another period for longer conversation once again. You can support the Republic Broadcasting Network by contacting us at republicbroadcasting.org or giving us a call at 1-800-724-2719. That's republicbroadcasting.org on the World Wide Web, or give us a call at 1-800-724-2719. You can also have Aaron Russo's new DVD, America, Freedom to Fascism, for $19.95 plus $4.95 shipping and handling by using those same contact points, republicbroadcasting.org or 1-800-724-2719. You can also call in today at 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. If you have a question either for me or for Thomas Ginn, we're also going to have Bill Bloom on the show at 9 o'clock Central Standard Time discussing his anti-empire report, which emanates from Washington, D.C. So that'll be a real treat for you at 9 o'clock Central Standard Time. And certainly, as we get about this whole business of talking about various people that have a lot to offer to the Republic Broadcasting Network, Kevin Barrett is going to be on the show tomorrow from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock Central Standard Time. Kevin is an individual that you may know through another show on this same network. We're going to be talking about a series of things related to 9/11 and to American foreign policy in the Middle East and this whole issue of what is going on in the country domestically as well as internationally as we move towards some rocky times in the day ahead. That's going to be Kevin Barrett tomorrow, joining us from 8 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time. Tom, getting back to our conversation, keeping in mind that we're going to be involved in a couple of other commercial breaks here in the next couple of minutes, I wanted to emphasize again that people can find your websites at csanews.net, also confederatelegion.com, as well as confederatestatesalliance.net. We'll be mentioning those ongoingly in the next hour or so. But during the period of time that you've been involved in conversation with us this morning, I've been jotting down six or seven political issues, potentially constitutional issues that relate to your vision for a Confederate States of America. When we come back for the next commercial break, I want to take up a few of these issues to see how you would envision those things being handled by a repristinated CSA. This is Mark Nankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll be back with Thomas Ginn. Stay tuned.